Well, also, unfortunately, we couldn't get that loudspeaker. So, we'll just have to try and pay as much attention as possible. I'll try and project my voice as much as I can. Today, I thought we could read the article from The Harmonist about Vatsasura, page 21. It's a very interesting article, all about education and children and how children should be brought up and trained. So I think there'll be quite a bit of interest to most of you. It's either written by or at least edited by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So first of all, Vatsasura, we look at the top of page 21. He's a calf demon. He represents the difficulties which arise in Krishna consciousness, particularly amongst children, or those who are childishly minded, but particularly amongst children. Tendency to be frivolous, mischievous, through excessive simplicity to be too easily influenced by bad association like this. In his previous lifetime, Vatsasura had been a demon, Pramila, the son of Muru. Muru is one of the demons killed by Krishna while Krishna is living in Dwaraka. So Pramila apparently conquered the demigods in battle and went into Vasishtha's ashram and saw Vasishtha's cow, Nandini. And Pramila decided that he wanted that cow, so he disguised himself as a Brahmin and tried to beg her in charity. But the cow understood what the situation was and said, "You're a demon in disguise. For this offense you'll have to appear as a calf." So Pramila then surrendered to Vasishtha and begged for mercy. And Vasishtha said that during that birth as a calf, he would be liberated by the Lord. It appears in the case of many of these demons who appear in animal forms, it appears they weren't always in animal forms during that lifetime. But they would, sometimes they would be in human forms, other times they would be in animal forms. Because it's described elsewhere that Vatsasura, when he wanted to infiltrate into the group of associates of Krishna and in this way sneak up on Krishna and Balaram and try and kill them, it's explained that he actually assumed the form of a calf at that time. Another interesting explanation which is given about why he assumed the form of a calf. And similarly with Arishtasura, who assumed the form of a bull, was that both of them, even though they're big demons, and as is the case with demons generally, they're very bold, they're very overconfident, very proud, they think they're very powerful and no one can stand up against them. So generally all the demons that Krishna met and killed during his pastimes, they're all thinking like that. Proud, envious type of mentality. But in the case of Vatsasura and Arishtasura, Vatsasura was in the form of a calf, Arishta was in the form of a bull. So our acharyas say that they assumed cow forms or bovine forms because even though they're big demons, they're a little aware of Krishna's potency, so they didn't feel terribly confident when they are coming to do battle with Krishna. Actually, they were both feeling that there was a fairly good chance they might be defeated and killed, and they were certainly hoping to avoid at least being killed. So they both knew that Krishna is very kindly disposed to the cows and bulls. Therefore they both assumed forms like that in the hope that Krishna, even if he would defeat them, that then he would say that, no, I won't kill you. Because... But of course, unfortunately, it didn't, for them it didn't work. So Krishna and the coward boys were playing on the bank of the Yamuna, and Vatsasura, as she had stated here directly from the Krishna book, he assumed the shape of a calf and tried to mingle in with the other calves, but Krishna noticed that this is not one of our calves, this is a demon. So then Krishna grabbed him by his two hind legs, spun him around, just like with Balaram with Denikasura, and hurled him up into the top of the tree. He landed on the top of the tree and then came crashing down to the ground. And that was the end of Vatsasura. A short pastime, short but sweet. Not so sweet for Vatsasura. So, let us have a look at this article then. So, this is now bottom of page 21. Vatsasura represents evils that are peculiar to boyhood or childhood, or to those who are neophytes in devotional service, like spiritually children, that type of mentality. And these evils can only be eliminated by Krishna's mercy. You can't really overcome these things yourself. Actually, this is the case with all the demons who are killed by Krishna, that all of those anathas, you can't really overcome them yourself. But you have to take shelter of Krishna, and then Krishna will destroy those anathas. Now, in the case of the demons killed by Lord Balaram, it's somewhat different. Who can tell me who were the two demons killed by Lord Balaram? Denikasura and Palambasura. So we discussed about Denikasura. He represents the mode of ignorance. And Palambasura, he basically represents the mode of passion. In other words, they're representing two very big things, very broad types of anathas. Whereas, for example, here we're reading about Vatsasura. He represents a particular type of anatha. It's not such a broad, like a very broad category. More like some particular idiosyncrasy of the materialistic mentality. Whereas Palamba and Denika, they represent very broad categories. So the idea is that in the case of those demons killed by Lord Balaram, you all have to make a particular effort yourselves. Not that in the case of the anathas which are related to the demons killed by Krishna, that you don't make any effort. Of course we also have to make an effort. But in the case of the anathas which the demons killed by Lord Balaram represent, the devotee has to make a particular attempt, a strong attempt. And then, by the mercy of Lord Balaram, one will get the potency to overcome these things. I don't know if you read the introduction to the section about Denikasura or Palambasura. I don't know if any of you have read through this much yet. But we quoted from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is the person who is explained all about these anathas and how the demons represent them. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point is there that how do you get the mercy of Lord Balaram? Well, Lord Balaram is known as the original spiritual master, and the spiritual master is a representative of Lord Balaram. So in order to get his mercy, one has to really take shelter of the spiritual master to overcome those particular anathas. Then, if one really takes shelter very nicely and endeavors very nicely, then Lord Balaram's mercy and Shakti will be channeled to you via the spiritual master. So, anyway, that's the situation there. Otherwise, the anathas, which the demons which Krishna killed represent, they can only really be eliminated by Krishna's mercy. And it's encouraging, he says here, that if one engages in devotional service, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, they'll be completely eradicated at an early stage. That's particularly these anathas which Vatsasura represents. So now point one is a paragraph in which the subject basically is that children, or you could say boys should be boys and girls should be allowed to be girls, children shouldn't be overly controlled. Small children, they should be allowed to be children and express their childish, playful natures, but within Krishna consciousness. Their juvenile innocence shouldn't be stifled artificially, because it may hamper their development. Point two is explaining that despite that fact, still it's understood that there are black sheep who may contaminate children. So it is a fact that proper caretakers have to be there. That means proper Krishna conscious teachers, actually. This whole article is all revolving around the subject of education and how to train children. So caretakers have to be there to see that the children can be children nicely, so they feel happy and satisfied, they can express themselves, but also to be careful that they don't get contaminated. So then he makes the point, we're still in the first paragraph of point two, that by material means you can't really protect the children from being contaminated by bad association. The only way to protect them from the influence of bad association is to expose them to Krishna consciousness, train them in Krishna consciousness, and help them to get a taste for Krishna consciousness, even as little children. This is much along the same lines as the point that we read when we were discussing about Putana, that you can't simply arbitrarily impose artificial rules on people, that you can't do this and you must do that, and expect that it's really going to help them to overcome whatever difficulties they may have or whatever weaknesses they may have. So similarly with children, it's really the same principle. That if you want to protect them from developing bad habits, then you can't just tell them, don't do that. Try and chastise them or punish them, something of that sort, to reform them. But you have to see that they get the higher taste through being encouraged to engage in Krishna consciousness. Then the second paragraph in point two, this is the only effective and it is the natural way to guide children and help them to improve their characters and become purified, even in their own little ways. They have to be exposed to the attraction of Krishna. Then they'll soon learn to pick up Krishna consciousness. They'll develop a taste for it in their own ways. So, now we'll go on to point three. He talks about Puritanism. Probably you've heard of Puritanism. It was something, if I remember correctly, was a particular feature of Victorian society in England, probably towards the end of the last century. And the idea was just this negative idea, stop people from doing things, don't let them do things. Or as my grandfather told me, he was brought up in those days, one of my grandfathers, his name was Norman, and his father or mother or someone would tell his older brother, go and see what Norman is doing and stop him. That's sort of, in a nutshell, Puritanism. The children must be doing something wrong. So just stop them at every step beyond their cases, and then you may have a chance of making them to good people. So now we get into a very interesting subject matter here in point three. So the Puritanic idea of God is, it has its origin in persons who are elderly and who are sort of seasoned, they've been through life, and they know that it is actually a good idea to avoid so many things. Although it's young, they know that young people are attracted to those things. And their idea is to make, ideally, the kingdom of God on earth, or at least to improve society by stopping people from making the same mistakes they may have made. But now he makes a very interesting point. If you scratch the thin coating on the surface of their sage and sober scheme, then you will detect a rotten arrangement, the idea of which is to simply increase the sensuous enjoyment of the children who they're trying to train by denying them of things. So how are they doing that? The idea is that if the child is allowed to spoil his health in boyhood, then when he's an adult, he won't be able to gratify his senses so much. So if you gratify your senses a lot when you're young, they feel, you'll burn yourself out. So when you're an adult, and you're really more in a position to come to grips with life, you won't be able to enjoy sense gratification as much as if you restrain yourself when you're young. And then when you're older, then you can really make the most of it. Do you follow the idea? It's a very interesting idea. Unless the young man husbands or sort of protects his resources for sense gratification, he'll be the victim of premature old age. It is a policy of expediency, of postponing a small present amount of enjoyment in order to get a much larger amount of enjoyment in later years. Isn't that an interesting philosophy? So that's the idea, actually. Why is it that children are not allowed to smoke? By law, I think, at least it was in my childhood. Why are they not allowed to drink liquor until they're 18 or 21? Because the idea, I mean, the people don't think that it's wrong to smoke. They don't think it's wrong to drink liquor. Actually, they think it's extremely good. But why don't they let the children do it? Well, one of the reasons is they feel that if they get too much into it when they're young, then when they're older, they won't be able to relish it so much. So, it's called Shreyas and Prayas in Sanskrit. Shreyas means that, if I remember which is which, Shreyas, I think, means that if you postpone your enjoyment, you'll get more enjoyment in the long run. Whereas prayas means you take your enjoyment now and you don't get it in the future, short term and long term. Like, you know, so many children don't want to go to school. It's an austerity. They're thinking, I'm going to lose out on my enjoyment, which in a sense is true. So, but they're told, no, you go to school. So they take the austerity. But then when they've left school, the idea is then they'll be able to have very profitable lives and make progress and achieve something and have good lives. Whereas if they just play around during their childhood, when they come to be adults, they won't be able to get themselves together to have a very nice life in maturity. So that's the idea. Postpone a small amount of present amount of enjoyment in order to get more enjoyment in adulthood. So then in point four, he's talking about the Indian concept, like a traditional, it's not really a long-standing tradition, but it's somewhat traditional concept of brahmacharya. Now, of course, you don't have it so much here in South Africa, but the traditional idea in India definitely is that young boys particularly, they become brahmacharis. Historically, this was the educational system for young boys. So they go to the ashram of the spiritual master, and they lead very austere lives, and they're trained quite rigorously, abstaining from sense gratification, working hard, studying hard. It's quite an existence. So, in India, people, you know, the idea is there, particularly in the older generation, that this is very good. Children should be, boys should be trained like this. It'll help them to become better adults. So, the real idea, he says, is that that brahmacharya concept should be that people are trained in Krishna consciousness. But that's not how it's applied. Of course, now here he's talking about India of 60 years ago, where the system of Gurukul was more in existence than it is now, although still in existence to some extent. So he says, the ascetic practices that are in current times thought to be the proper practices of brahmacharya, they've been interpolated, they've been interpreted in such a way that the children, the boys, are trained in some version of brahmacharya, but the goal of that is that they'll become more expert in dealing with material nature, or more expert in gratifying their senses when they become adults. In other words, we'll read, he makes the point more clearly a little further on, but the basic idea is that if the boys are trained to be very austere and that they're brought up in that way, then when they're adults, they'll be model citizens and they'll work very hard, be very upright citizens, involved in business, commerce, and all these things. Don't worry about Krishna consciousness. But they'll be very disciplined and very organized when they're working in their adulthood, which is a very materialistic idea. Very materialistic idea. It's something like, a little bit like the concept that parents have here, that my son is an investment for the future. If he's brought up nicely, I give him the best education and everything, because it's not the brahmachari style, but they want to give him the best education. Why? Well, one motivation is so that in my old age, he'll work very hard. He'll be like a model son, and he'll work very hard and look after me very nicely, and everything will be fine for me. So it's a similar type of idea, really. So, then an interesting description of their attitude towards the material nature, or Mother Nature. Nature is regarded as a kind mother who favors only those of her children who are expert at prying into her secrets. Nature is supposed to be unable to avoid divulging her secrets to her inquisitive children, even though she's aware that these same children are only going to end up exploiting her when they find out what her secrets are. In other words, it's assumed to be the duty of the kind mother, nature, to consent to put herself in chains in order to minister to the sensuous appetites of her more capable children. Nature is assumed to be able to do good to her children only by submitting to be the victim of their lust. Outro. So then he goes on page 23. So the practices of asceticism, does anyone not know what asceticism means? Basically means austerity, renunciation. Actually, these practices of austerity in this so-called brahmachari style of education, these practices are really conceived in the Epicurean spirit, or in the spirit of enjoying this material world. The ascetic, the renunciate, this brahmachari, dreams of being able to control nature as the end result of this process of renunciation that he'll go through in his childhood. He goes through this process of renunciation in childhood, then he'll become strong enough to exploit material nature and get lots of sense gratification as an adult. If you think about it, you'll see it's very, very sort of deep insight into these things. He has an idea that when he's perfected his defensive arrangements, in other words, when he's really able to control himself, then he'll be able to become the master of material nature and exploit material nature to the maximum. The brahmachari, according to this point of view, goes through this training period, very austere period, in order to become the model citizen, the pillar of materialistic society. Working hard, making lots of money to gratify the senses. Because to be a model materialistic citizen is not easy. It's very demanding. You need to be strong in order to really be a successful materialist as an adult. So then he goes on to make an interesting point in the next paragraph. Spiritual training should really be transcendental, not mundane. There are no real mundane considerations in spiritual training. And he says it's not even really a spiritual affair to be able to control one's bodily desires. Actually, the devotee becomes able to control himself or herself, like we have our four regulative principles. Not simply by becoming strong and saying, no, I won't do this and I won't do that. But as one gets the higher taste through engaging in devotional service, then it follows very naturally and very easily that one is able to leave aside activities of gross sense gratification. Actually, we've had a very interesting experience in America just recently. You may have heard of this sort of rock and roll group called Shelter, Krishna Conscious Group. Have you heard of that? Some of you may have seen the video. I have a new video, it's pretty bizarre, but in fact it's extremely bizarre. But what they're doing, they're preaching to young people through their music. Young people who have come to the realization, at least to some extent they have appreciated, that all this sense gratification, intoxication, illicit sex life, and all these things, meat eating even, that these things are not good and we should give them up. It's like a subdivision of the Western youth culture called straight edge. You should be very straight. They have the same Europe, Western youth culture. You should be very straight. Not do any of these things. Be very clean cut. But what they found was that those in the audiences, those of their followers, who they were very concerned to give up this and give up that and not do these things. But those of them who didn't take up Krishna consciousness in a positive way, they all fell down. I mean, they're gradually falling down, and many of them have. Even one of the top groups who was like a competitor of Shelter, Their name was the Cro-Mags. They weren't devotees. One of them was something of a devotee for some time, but the others, they weren't devotees. They were just into this idea of not doing this and not doing that. So the whole group disintegrated and has more or less ceased to exist for exactly this reason. They just couldn't in their own lives stop themselves from doing those things. So if you don't get the higher taste, Krishna makes that point in Bhagavad Gita.